Blog Talk Radio. Time, and it's Wednesday night. I thought I'd start very mellow, okay, since I usually get into a real, you know, exciting mood because that music just gets me all hyped up.
I was bouncing.
You can't help but bounce. But I wish it would just, you know, end just a little bit smoother. It just abruptly just stops.
That's okay. It gets just pumped up. It's like we're on a constant high for the entire show, as we should be.
This is true. So welcome to all of our online listeners and our telephone listeners and our listeners on in chat. I'm thrilled to see that we've got, I don't think we could have any other listeners, our future listeners, you know, when they tune into iTunes and Archive Blog Talk Radio.
You there, people. Hello.
Hello. So, okay, tell us what you've been up to this week or what do you have coming up, going on? Any webinars?
I don't have any webinars. Actually, I do. I'm doing a LinkedIn training tomorrow and Friday for somebody. Just a personal one-on-one training, which is always fun. And then, I don't know, I have a ton of stuff coming up. I started the Baltimore Social Media Group. So we finalized our first meetup for October 16th that we're going to be having here in Towson. And so I'm really excited about that. We're trying to reach out to anyone who does social media for their business in the Baltimore area. So we're going to do workshops and speakers and on a monthly basis. So I'm really excited to launch that. So I think that's pretty much, it's the first week I didn't have to speak, which was kind of relaxing.
Good. Now, didn't you attend a conference, the Fit Blogging Conference? Did you end up going to that?
That's true. Yes, I did. I went to the Fit Blogging Conference on Friday, which was super cool. And I can tell you what was missing from Brand Camp, because they gave out tennis shoes, and I was just stunned. I mean, granted, it was a conference for fitness bloggers, but when they said, "What size shoe do you wear?" I was like, that's a little weird. I've never been asked that when I've checked into a conference before. And it was the Reebok people, and they just handed me a pair of tennis shoes. And I said, thank you very much, but I can't imagine what the expression on my face looks like. So I thought that was really fun. But it was cool. It was basically to help people who are going to be trying to make some sort of business out of blogging, fitness tips, their diet stories about running, et cetera, and how to use social media and all of that. So because one of my clients is in that industry, I thought I would go and try to get some insider tips on how to speak more appropriately to that community. So it was really insightful.
Wow. Yeah, tennis shoes. Huh. That's a good idea.
I was Instagramming them, and I was like, you gave these shoes to the right person. I'm like, everybody's going to know. Reebok gave me tennis shoes.
Yeah, but I'm thinking the upcoming IFA conference in Las Vegas come February. Boy, you know, I always slip some flat shoes in my bag because walking all around that conference center in heels just kills your legs. But we should give out sneakers. So without further ado, we have actually two guests with us tonight. We are so lucky. So we invited Todd Leiser from Valpak to return with us because if it weren't for Todd, we would not have met our guest, Andy Staggles from Higher Logic. So hello, Todd.
Well, good evening, and I'm glad you're doing well, Deb. Same with UAK.
Thanks.
So there's no pressure here tonight, Todd, but I know I tweeted this earlier, put it on Facebook, but you, sir, were the guest of the hour that Social Geek Radio hit its first 10,000 downloads for one episode.
Well, I don't think it was a guest. I think it was a co-host that night.
Actually.
Whatever it was, that was our first. So I'm just letting you know, I'm expecting, you know, we're close, but we haven't hit 20,000 for one episode yet, but we are so close.
So tonight.
I think tonight. So why don't you do the honors of introducing our guests for us?
Well, sure. Our guest tonight is Andy Spiegels, and Andy is the president of Higher Logic. And I met Andy about 3 weeks ago at an IFA public affairs conference up in Washington, D.C. And we chatted for a few minutes, and the introduction was based on Andy's company doing some work for the IFA and the upcoming launch of a social community for IFA members. And I find that to be very interesting. I'm on the PR and marketing committee, and we had a presentation from Andy, and I was very impressed with all the things that his company does and all the different associations that he works with. So without further ado, hi, Andy. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me here. Apparently, I've got some pretty high expectations to live up to, so I'll do my best. But no, I'm very excited to be invited to speak with you all.
Well, the best thing to do would be to start and just tell us about Higher Logic.
Sure, yeah. So Higher Logic, we're a social media software company. We have a private white labeled social platform. So if you envision kind of like LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, a bit of Twitter, wrap it all into one, and have design it and build it in a way that it can plug into any CRM, so it's completely agnostic based on what the database is. And more importantly, you can leverage all the data in the CRM, you know, in the franchise or whatever the database is that hosts all the customer information, or the franchisors, the franchisees, you know, even their employees and whatnot, committees, you know, regions, and all the information that's relevant to your constituents, pull it all out, put it into a social community, and that's a private, you know, lockdown social community where people can share best practices, share ideas. Think of a traditional intranet, but on steroids, and, you know, just take it up a few knots, and yeah, it's probably, you know, it's probably a good comparison about what we have.
So. Let me ask you the hard question first.
Sure.
And this was kind of crossing my mind, and while I ask it, I am a believer, but I'll still ask the question. You know, why in the world do we need another social network?
Well, here's the thing. When you and let me give you a little story here that will help answer to that. I used to be the CIO for the Risk and Insurance Management Society, RIMS, based out of New York. This is a professional organization that had whose members were risk managers. So similar to how, you know, a franchisor would have franchisees, an association would have corporate members that would have employees and so on. And, you know, when I was trying to pitch, you know, back in the day, this is about 5 years ago, when I was trying to pitch RIMS that we needed a social network for our members, I just kept getting laughed at. And the same question was asking me, why do we need another social network? And then finally it dawned on me one day, after about the fifth time of being like slapped down by the board, they finally realized that they just didn't understand what I was talking about. So instead of going in and saying, all right, we need a social network, and knowing full well I was just going to get, you know, slammed down again, I just said, hey, forget the social network. I'm over that. I agree. We don't need another social network. How about we put in instead, I've got a whole different idea. How about we put in some collaboration tools to help our members do their job, help them ask each other questions, collaborate, share best practices, create like a member directory, allow them to find each other based on industry segments and connect with each other and so on. And when I said it like that, they were all like, yes, that's great, let's do it. And, of course, I'm laughing to myself in back of my mind because it's exactly the same thing, right? It is a social network. It's just not how, you know, it's not Facebook, right? And it's not supposed to be Facebook. It's a professional collaboration tool that allows your constituents to you know, to do better in their job and allows them for their franchises to grow.
So positioning it as a collaboration tool makes it framed up as much more focused on the need as opposed to this is just another time suck.
It really depends who your audience is. You know, like when I went out and started speaking to the ski and snowboard instructors of America, I started talking about collaboration tools, and they had absolutely no interest. But the moment I started mentioning social networks, they were all over it. So it really is. And of course, you know, the franchise world, it's everybody's, for the most part, very professional and corporate. And so in that environment, you know, the collaboration aspect would be probably more appropriate.
Play to your audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and this is Deb. So thinking about this social network platform, and Todd, you and I, and AK, you know, involved in the franchising, and we so often speak in the franchising industry about the importance of using the various social platforms with their local communities. One of the things, when I was talking with Andy last week, and then I received a demo from Mark from HireLogic, I started thinking that's the beginning. Maybe we should start thinking about educating the franchisors and the franchisees on how to use these social networks internally. And it would be so much easier for them when we're training them and doing these fran camps and different seminars on how to use the social platforms externally with their customers.
So, you know, just playing on that, when you look at what the three core areas of social are, right,
mm-hmm.
This is kind of a framework I really grabbed from Gartner, really. They have three, you may or may not know this, but Gartner's got these magic quadrants they do, right? That's their research methodology they use. It's called a magic quadrant. And they take an area of business, they create a magic quadrant on it, and they tell you the core areas of magic quadrant, what people use that business function for, and so on. Well, they've actually created three different magic quadrants, which sounds weird because quad is four, but it's three different quadrants of four, you know, four aspects to do with social. Forrester have created what they call waves as well around them. But the three core areas that it's typically broken down into is the social software in the workplace. And that's really a way for employees of a company to collaborate. So this would be more, for example, the franchisor itself, for all of the employees at the franchisor to be able to collaborate more effectively. The latest trend I'm hearing about this is actually to do with healthcare in the workplace, because especially with the franchise, you know, in the franchise world, the Obamacare that's, you know, kicking off in 2014 is becoming a huge issue, especially with the, you know, the lower level labor that, you know, maybe are paid on the hourly basis or that sort of thing. And so, you know, one of the things employers are taking more seriously is, you know, how can we reduce the healthcare costs? And there's been clinical research to prove that better collaboration in the workplace reduces stress and improves things like absenteeism and stuff like that. So then the question goes, well, how can we improve collaboration in the workplace? And putting in a system that isn't just email, you know, a better collaboration system where people can post problems, you know, talk about projects, look for people with specific skill sets and so on in the larger organizations can really help that. So that's kind of one of the latest trends as far as social in the workplace is concerned. Of course, there's many other reasons to use social in the workplace, projects, tasks, things like that. Then one of the others is social CRM. And this is really a business strategy that generates opportunities for sales, marketing, customer service, and that sort of thing. And then the third one, which I think is most relevant for franchises, is the what Gartner called the EFSS, which is the externally facing social software. And this software, it supports collaboration and social interaction with large groups of users outside of the enterprise workforce. So think of the first one, the social software in the workplace, as being a place for employees, the franchisor employees to collaborate with each other. The last one is for the franchisees themselves, and this could be just the owners of the franchisees. It could be the employees, or maybe their key managers, or whoever you want to. It allows them to collaborate with each other. And of course, one of the huge benefits for the franchisor is to be able to listen to the conversation. There's an old saying that the conversation's happening whether you're listening or not, and it's really true. But if you can listen, there's a tremendous amount of business intelligence that you could gather from that. It also enables the franchisees themselves to learn from each other. You know, often they're not competing, and that's a huge advantage when you compare like a franchise or type of setup with maybe a trade association or something, where people are just so afraid of sharing anything for giving away trade secrets or things like that. But in the franchise world, that's not normally the case. So there's tremendous opportunity there, and we're seeing we're definitely seeing more of that. And we've seen a lot of it in different verticals as well. Like, for example, software user groups. We have a lot of those, associations or, societies, alumni groups. Wherever there's a group of people with a common interest, whether it's business or personal, there might be an opportunity there to leverage EFSS. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so the concept of the collaboration amongst franchisees and franchisor, the ability to listen, the ability to track the data of usage, all things that at the end of the day have benefit for all constituents. The franchisor has a communication tool to the franchisee. The franchisees have communication tool to each other. They can all collaborate. Is that what you're seeing in your other clients that are associations, where you still have similarities between different constituents wanting to talk to one another and collaborate with one another within whatever business or channel that they are all focused on? And is there going to be any difference with the franchisor-franchisee relationship?
Well, I mean, yes, so that's it. The examples you've given are great examples. And in the association world, like just as an example, when you look in the CRM of an association, you'll see there are committees, many different committees. There are events. Franchises typically have events, where they've got exhibitors displaying the different products that can be bought by the franchisees and things like that. But of course, you have educational sessions helping people improve the best practices around franchises. Franchise owners, talking about franchisee owners talking about their franchise and best practices and case studies and things like that. So all of those are the same sort of things an association would have. A franchise would typically have a steering committee. They might have different task forces made up of franchisees from different segments. They might have regional groups. They would certainly have events, educational offerings. And then, of course, you've got the industry at large. For example, the easy one is, what if you just put all of the franchisees in a kind of like an open forum? Let's say that you've got 1,000 franchises around the world. Right. Well, you have the opportunity to slice and dice those thousand franchises as much as you like from a community perspective. You could do it the easy way and just take 1,000 owners and just stick with the owners, because it's like low-hanging fruit, and put them all in a single open forum that's locked down. So you have to log into the regular intranet and then go into the open forum that way, and then allow them to talk with each other. But when you look at it, you actually might find there's a better case for slicing and dicing because, maybe North America operate the franchise very differently than Europe. And so a lot of it is just a case of looking at the business and thinking about how best does it make sense to segment the groups. I will say the biggest mistake I see people make, though, is over-segmentation. you know, the simple truth is, the more people you have in a single community, the easier it is to generate conversation. And of course, there are always exceptions to this rule, and you know, and you know, one of the other mistakes I see people make is having location-based groups. You know, why do you? Maybe you've got the you know, the Southeast region, they get together on a, you know, regular basis to talk about their challenges with the franchise. Well, do you want to create a community for the Southeast region? Well, or will that dilute the conversation from the broader region? And all of these examples are identical in whether you're an association, a society, an alumni group. It's just a case of looking at the CRM, looking at the database, and figuring out, Where do you think it would be useful for your customers, if you're your franchisees, to be able to collaborate? And what sort of things do you want to hear them collaborating about? And that would have a direct correlation with how you set this up. So does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense, okay, to me. You know, and one of the things when I was looking at the system itself, and I was trying to distinguish it, a lot of what you're talking about now is using the platform within the system internally. But is it possible to have those conversations that you're speaking of, where the franchisees can have the conversations with their customers that they're also collaborating or working within these conversations, or is this just an internal system?
Oh, yeah, no, you could definitely do that. I mean, there's been some great examples of that. I mean, Starbucks is the one, the obvious one that springs to mind. You know, they put together a kind of an idea storm that allowed them to basically give their customers a voice, you know, and generate, you know, their customers can submit ideas, and then their other customers can vote on the ideas. And then Starbucks hold themselves accountable to looking at the ideas and figuring out what are we going to do and what are we going to implement and how are we going to report back to our customers. So that's a great example about how you can do that. You know, other companies are going along the idea storm as well. You know, generally, my recommendation is, you know, take baby steps into this, if you will. Go for the thing that's obviously going to, you know, make sense in terms of, you know, help your franchisees help each other. The other thing, it can seriously reduce support costs as well. So if the only place a franchisee has got to go is the franchise or the franchisor, then, you know, the franchisor has got to provide a support environment to respond to all of those requests, questions, and everything else. And so if the support environment is a way where you can have communities and they're not just asking the franchisor, but they're asking the community, of which, you know, for example, typically with the HireLogic user group, we ask people to submit the support question to the community if they wish. Of course, they can submit them straight to us, but generally people submit to the community. And then we just watch it and we wait 24 hours. If nobody's responded in 24 hours with the right response, then we'll jump in. But usually, like probably about 80% of the time, there's been a myriad of responses with different solutions, all of which are good solutions, but they're just different ways of doing it. And so, you know, frankly, from our experience, our support costs have probably been reduced by about 80% overall, which has been phenomenal for the business. So, you know, so think about it from that side as well, because there's definitely a bottom line. You know, upside to this. That's in addition to the R&D, obviously, which, you know, from the idea storm. Sure. Sorry, Todd, go ahead.
Yeah, switching gears real quick. How do you keep people from really kind of self-serving messaging? One of the things that bothers me about LinkedIn is that there's always in these different groups, people that are trying to promote their product or promote themselves. Is it different within a social community inside an association or a group where there's less need to do that, or does that still have to be policed as well?
Yeah, and it depends how you set it up. It's very different just from the fact that everybody's completely accountable. you know, when somebody posts a message, that message links back to the individual's profile, you know, and if people start kind of, kind of abusing the system in whether it's, you know, marketing, self-promotion or whatever else, then they'll get slammed from their peers. You know, it's just not frowned upon very well. Now, the other thing is, you know, the access to the community, if all you've got is franchisees and you don't have any sales, you know, any vendors in there, then, of course, the odds of people trying to sell stuff is much, you know, is reduced significantly. I'm not saying you should do that. I'm just saying it does reduce the risk of that happening. We've got tons of communities where, you know, the vendors can be incredibly valuable in terms of their responses, but they know that they're not allowed to use it in any way whatsoever as a sales pitch. A number of our clients put in, for example, like a three-strike rule, you know, three strikes and you're banned. You know, one strike and you're temporarily banned or something like that. And it's all pretty easy to set up. So, but really, probably the most effective way is just moderation. There are traditionally three levels of moderation on with most platforms out there. One is simply no moderation, right, which is a free-for-all. Everything just goes out. It's everybody's accountable for their postings, but it goes out and there's no approval necessary. The other one is full moderation, which means, of course, every message has to get approved. And then the other one is probably the most popular one, is self-moderation. And self-moderation typically means that it goes out without approval, but anybody can click mark as inappropriate at any time. I'm going to say it goes out. Let's say you've got 10,000 people in a you know, discussion group or a community. A message gets posted, and it goes out to 10,000 people as either part of a daily digest or in real time via email or via RSS or whatever the means, but it goes out. So if somebody marks it as inappropriate, it can be pulled. Or maybe you set it up so several people have to mark it as inappropriate, and then it gets pulled. So there's different ways you can manage that, and it really depends on the industry you're in, how competitive people are, whether you're going to let vendors in and those sort of things. Definitely don't see it as though we should definitely keep vendors out, because, you know, really, if somebody's asking a question on how do I fix my, you know, my widget generator, X, Y, you know, whatever it is, then, you know, if one of the vendors is there, they can respond with the exact instructions on how to do that. And, you know, it is what it is. They've provided a valuable response. So, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, do you find in these communities that those vendors are very active? I guess my fear would be that you open this community up to the franchisees and the vendors, and those questions are asked. So let's say, you know, a very valid question is asked by a franchisee, and they're sitting and they're waiting and they're waiting for a vendor to reply. Well, a vendor is a member, but they've not they're not a participating member. Do you find that in these communities that you run into that, or you don't necessarily run into that because they're very active communities?
Yeah, generally we find if you let vendors in there, they're way more active than regular members.
That's what I thought.
Because obviously, mm-hmm. you know, obviously they're trying to promote their brand, but the smart vendors will realize they'll promote it by demonstrating their expertise. Which means mm-hmm. they'll really research the answer, like, and you know, just post a very informed response versus a fly-by-night, you know, one-liner mm-hmm. response that may or may not add value. You know, one of the other things we recommend as well is in the terms and conditions or the code of conduct or the netiquette or whatever you want to mm-hmm. call it for the community, you really need to define what is allowed up front. So there's no confusion. Also, you can point people to, you know, to these rules that you've created, and you know, it is what it is. Here's the rules. And a few of our customers actually have put in something along the lines of, whatever you post must add to the body of knowledge, as deemed by the organization, like the franchisor, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a get out of jail free card. It just means that. Anybody can, they can look at a posting at any time and say, you know what, that doesn't really add value, and they can pull it because they've decided it doesn't add value. So, because obviously there's always going to be these gray areas where somebody's posted something, and you know what? It is answering a question, but look, it's a total sales. It's a total sales pitch. You know it, I know it, everybody knows it. So, you know, so it, but technically they've complied with each one of the rules.
Right.
So having that kind of generic get out of jail free, you know, catch all is usually a good thing to do, although hopefully you'll never need it.
So, I guess we should probably just remind folks that maybe tuned in late. We're talking to Andy Stegels, who's the president of Higher Logic. And Andy, I wanted to ask you, how many associations do you provide a private social platform for?
We probably provide about 400, not just associations, but, you know, say alumni groups, you know, like Microsoft CRM, for example, is one of our user groups that we, you know, a lot of software user groups we provide. It's also not just like in the US, it's literally all over the world. You know, one of our Australian clients, for example, is the Public Works Engineering Australia, www.ipwea.org.au, I think it is. Probably our smallest client is the Ghana Association of Women Entrepreneurs. This is one of our social responsibility ones we did, but you know, it's a very small organization in Ghana. But they're using a, you know, they're using a social platform for women entrepreneurs in Ghana to collaborate and share ideas and whatnot. So it's, you know, it's a really good, you know, it's a good cause, and they're doing great from it. But we've got a very diverse customer base.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I find very interesting is you've got visibility, albeit in the aggregate and also individually, of 400 different communities utilizing a social media platform. And while Facebook and LinkedIn and others get all the noise and all the attention, you probably have some tremendous insights that really those other better-known platforms can never get to.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty interesting. We actually, the 400 clients actually represent, because remember, each client would have many different communities, right? Each organization has many different communities, one for their board of directors, one for every event they've ever had, one for every industry segment, one for, you know, like anything, any kind of segment of their organization you can think of, they've got a community for. So 400 organizations actually translates into about 10,000 communities, and 10,000 communities translates over 10 million members. So we actually have over 10 million people participating in these 10,000 communities that belong to like 400 different organizations. So it's pretty massive, really, when you you know, when you look at the aggregate stats. What's most interesting is, there's a lot of talk these days about big data, and you know, we have big data. We've got incredible analytics about, you know, what works for different types of organizations, and we're able to mine that. So when a certain organization comes to us, we look at different demographics, you know, like, you know, for example, who are the people that are going to be using this? Are they more professional, less professional? What sort of age range are they? What sort of, you know, like, for example, the American Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons, right? They're all eye doctors. Their average age is probably about 50, 55, something like that for the average demographic. Probably doing them a disservice there. But, you know, within a couple of months of them going live, over 100 videos had been shared that eye surgeons around the world had recorded and uploaded to their private members-only, you know, community. And, you know, one of their corporate strategies was going into the emerging markets and, you know, specifically India and China. And, you know, I'm not saying I want to be operated on by a doctor in India that's just watched a video that's been uploaded by one of their peers. But my point is, it's pretty interesting when, you know, conventionally you would think that, oh, doctors have got way, they've got no time on their hands. There's no way they'll ever do anything, you know, quote, social. But in fact, that really isn't the case. As long as it's positioned in the right way, it's you've got the right messaging there, and you know, and you don't mention the word social media. You know, you talk about professional collaboration, about, you know, taking the profession to the next level, educating people in you know, in other countries, and so on.
Yeah, so it can be like a training resource, but of their peers.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
that. Very interesting. So there was a question that was in my mind, and it just fell out. Well, one of the things that I was wondering, you know, and we're talking about all these social platforms, you know, what's the biggest, most common mistake that you see when any organization implements this type portal?
Other than the, you know, the over-segmentation is the most common one because, you know, for example, you know, people immediately think they should have a community for every event they've ever, you know, they've ever held or every chapter of their organization or, you know, whatever the group is, they think they need a community for it. And, you know, and that can really have a negative impact on your overall engagement because it can dilute the value. Because when you start looking at how do you measure success, you know, you have to think about, well, what is success for the organization versus what is the perception of success for the end user? If they're in a community and there's one message a week, then they're probably not going to see it as successful. But yet there might be 1,000 communities with one message a week, so the organization might just see 1,000 messages being generated each week, and from their side of things are very successful. So you've got two different perceptions of success, and it's really important you get them aligned. And so you do take into account both sides. And probably, you know, once you've got all that and you've got your strategy set up, you've got your implementation plan, the marketing, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a community launch without any sort of messaging in place, without marketing, but even being informed that it was going on. It's crazy, and you know, there's this perception that if you build it, they will come, and that's really not the case. I mean, you've got to build it, you've got to launch it, you've got to nurture it, and you've got to, you know, you've just got to keep tweaking it, refining it, and just getting it so it's as optimal as it can be. And success will come as long as you launch it in the right way. And frankly, I can't name the organization, but I'll tell you, this makes me laugh every time I think about it, although at the time it didn't make me laugh. I was pretty pissed about it, to be honest. This one organization came to us. They had 4 previous failed social platforms of some variety. And they came to us, and at first we're like, no, we don't want anything to do with this. I mean, it's been a disaster from day one, and you know, we don't want any part of it because it reflects poorly on us. And then, you know, after a little bit of negotiation, we finally said, all right, look, we'll work with you, but you have to commit to following at least our top 5 best practices or most effective practices. And, you know, and the pushback that I had initially when I first said, we'll do it, but only on condition you do this because, you know, you failed all these other times. The answer was absolutely not. We know exactly how we're going to make this work. We've failed at it 4 times, so we know how to get it right. And I almost fell off my chair. I mean, I'm like, what? So, you know, their rationale that they knew exactly how to do it the right way because they've done it wrong four previous times. They actually did come around and they did launch it. They followed the best practices, not all of them, and there's still definitely room to go, but they are incredibly successful. Their engagement has grown by literally over 1,000%. So it's, you know, they're very happy with it. We're happy with it, but it's still got a way to go. But the lack of ownership is probably the biggest, you know, other than segmentation and the poor marketing, but the next biggest is lack of ownership. And, you know, you'll have, for example, if you have the technology department spearhead it, they're all over, you know, implementing it, getting it set up, blah, blah, blah. But as far as actually launching it, nurturing it, the technology department are not community managers. But at the same time, if it's spearheaded by the marketing department, they've got no buy-in from technology, that can also backfire as well because technology might have this whole plan where they're going to, you know, build it themselves and try and, you know, add job security or whatever to certain individuals. And, you know what I mean? There can be a lot of internal politics. So I think as long as the core team, the core leadership are on the same page about what they want this to do for the organization, they set the right metrics in place, it can work really well.
Well, you know, when you and I were talking last week, too, and some of the capabilities that you mentioned, one of the things that made an impression on me is when I was thinking about a franchise organization and how do you involve the whole team, some of the things you mentioned, it's like, oh, that will really interest that franchise operations person. And then this piece of the platform will really interest the franchise development folks because you're talking about prospects and franchise lead generation. And then, you, of course, you have your leadership team that, because they're going to be engaged and understand that, wow, the franchisee profit is going up because you have all this engagement. So I think that's what caught my eye with the platform, that you really can. And as it was Jenny Dietrich and Jeff Livingston in their book talking about marketing in the round, that's what your platform is doing. It's just marketing to the entire organization, internally and externally.
It is, and every department of the organization is affected by social, whether they realize it or not. Right, and they're affected because there's a tremendous opportunity to leverage it to do better in their business, to become more transparent. And I realize that's a scary word for some organizations, but really it's becoming a differentiator between successful and more successful and less successful organizations. Having transparency with their franchisees as well as the customers of the franchisees. And putting in a feedback loop that can go straight up to corporate without having to go through tons of research to find data that you could have got firsthand if you'd have put the right mechanism in place. So it's a great opportunity. Even for example, when you look at things like the marketing department or the publications department, maybe you guys put out a newsletter. Well, to all the franchisors, well, what about digitizing the newsletter, which I'm sure a lot of people have done already, put it in an email. Well, what about putting a feedback loop? Just little things like you read an article and at the bottom you've got, blog this, discuss this, share this, which of course would link back to the collaborative platform that you have within your intranet and allow people to interact and talk about a particular article or discuss with the author. And so on. And the same goes even with the conference department. When they're organizing events, learning educational events or trade shows or whatever for the franchise. Or what about perhaps putting a call out to the franchisees and asking them what sessions they want to hear on or asking them to submit sessions? And even if you're doing that already, what about then allowing other franchisees to rate or recommend the different sessions that have been suggested by other franchisees? All of this has got business value, but it all helps drive the sense of community and nurture the sense of community and build ownership within the brand, which of course has got no end of an upside to the mother organization, if you will.
So, Andy, this is AK. Hi. I've been tweeting away with our Social Geek Radio hashtag. Just to kind of get us wrapped up, if a franchise wanted to implement a system such as this, what would be their next step?
Well, clearly just email andy@hyalogic.com. I'll definitely be in touch. Sorry, I can resist that one. I think probably the best thing is to try and figure out what you want, first of all, whether you might need, if you really haven't got a clue but that it sounds like a good idea, then maybe use a consultant to help you try and put it in some sort of framework. Make sure that whatever you do is mission focused. If the mission is to grow the franchise, is it to extend the brand, is it to extend the reach, grow awareness, like whatever it is, like that needs to tie in with your social strategy. And that will have a direct correlation whether, for example, you immediately go after the end customers or whether you try and help the franchisees or so on. That'll give you some sort of direction, because maybe the solution is more of an internal workplace collaboration environment versus a franchisee to franchisor collaboration environment and so on. So, other than that, I'd probably just start, once you figure out what you want, look out for the different vendors. Of course, we're one of them, but there are others out there, and just figure out, who might be a good fit based on your needs.
Great. Very good. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Could you please share with us where we can stalk you / track you down online should we need to?
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter, Steggles. I'm not the greatest tweeter, unfortunately, although I keep committing to do better at it, but I tend to use it a lot when I'm at events and things like that. But Steggles, or LinkedIn, or you can get me on just email andy@steggles.com. So
very
feel
good.
Free to hit me up.
We will do that. And Higher Logic has a Facebook page, so folks can find your Facebook page. And there's also another Twitter hashtag for Higher Logic. I've seen some tweets from there, too. So there's lots of ways that we can find you.
I tweet both. I usually tweet as myself, sometimes as Higher Logic.
Yeah.
But Facebook.com/Higher Logic as well.
Yeah. Very good. Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. And Todd, thank you for introducing Andy to us and the platform. Very informative tonight. So, gentlemen, you guys can hang with us and hold on if you'd like, or you're free to go. But AK is going to move right into her Geek It Out. And
yay!
Yay! Okay, I see we've got lots of folks in the chat and on the tweet deck just waiting to see what you're going to share with us tonight. And I saw that you were putting in the chat that there might be a Social Geek Radio koozie to give away.
Yeah, I'm trying to elicit Social Geek Radio tweets. So I think I had the most this time. I won. Sorry, guys. But, so I think for what we're going to do for our future shows, if you want to tweet along with what you're learning during the show, or you can feel free to retweet me at akstout18 or retweet Dev at DevCE. Whoever has the most Social Geek Radio hashtagged tweets, which will be determined when Deb loads her Storify story with all of the information from the show afterwards, the person with the most tweets will be awarded a wonderful Social Geek Radio koozie. And if you're really good, maybe we'll give you two so you can share one with a friend.
Well, very good. So what geeky sites do you have for us?
Well, let's see. We'll do our App of the Week first, our new App of the Week segment. So this week we have scanbizcards.com, scanbizcards.com. And I'll put that in our chat room here. So this one, it's very similar to the app. I believe LinkedIn has it built into its app. At least for iPhone. I don't think it's for Android, but I don't know. And there's a couple of other ones out there where you can take a picture, essentially, of somebody's business card, and you can upload it into your phone, and it might go to your contacts, or you can connect with them to LinkedIn. But if you're looking at the homepage right now of scanbizcards.com, you can see that this application, which is available for iPhone, Android, Windows, sorry about BlackBerry. Anyway, so this one does so much more. You can export all of the information to Excel. There's Skype integration. There's Evernote integration. You can import email signatures. There's 27 features of what you could potentially do with the contact information that you scan in from these business cards. There's also a feature of the website where, because it's all going to sort of stay in the cloud on this website, so you can integrate it with your iPad and all of your other mobile devices and sync across the web. But you can also, like if you were out at a networking event and let's say you collected 25 business cards and you want to load them all in, you can actually lay them all side by side on your scanner and you can scan them all in, and we'll upload all of the information at one time so you don't have to do it card by card.
Ooh, cool. Okay.
So that is our app of the week. Next, we have a site called thunderclap.it.
Somebody likes this one a lot. I've watched you use it, yes.
Yes. So the premise is you can basically start, well, it says start something, but you can start whether it's an event or just some sort of movement or cause awareness, basically something that you just want to get exposure for, get people involved in, and there's a sharing functionality to it. So you can upload your own. It gives you a nice page where you can put a graphic, you can put a description of what you want to do, and then you basically say how many sort of members that you want to get or how many people you want to sort of be contributing to sharing this, whatever it is. And people can then click a button and say, okay, I'm going to support it. I'm pledging via a tweet. And they'll send out a tweet and saying, I'm supporting yada, yada, yada. And then you kind of form this community around it. So it's a really great way to build awareness. It gives you a platform for that for your own. But I really liked looking through the site also just to see what people were putting up here. There were a lot of cause-related things, as you can probably imagine. But there's a lot of people doing sort of startup-type projects that they're mm-hmm. trying to build awareness of and get supporters and so they tell you the social reach of what you were doing and how many people have supported you based on your goal. So it's a pretty cool site.
Yeah, I was trying to remember where I saw you using it for, and I jumped over to the site and started looking at it, but it looks very robust.
Yeah, I did the hunt for a Pink October, One Hope Wine.
Yeah.
And I think I found a couple of others. So it's pretty cool. I believe when I hooked up to it, I was going to do a trial one, but I didn't get a chance to. But I think it's free, if I'm correct, to set it all up. So it looks really nice, and then you just start sharing that link and get people interested in it that way.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it was all free.
Yep. All right. Our next one is Contently.com. contently.com. And this one is sort of a curator for any online writing that you might do. So I write for theexaminer.com, so I was able to hook up the RSS feed for my Examiner articles as well as my blog. And it gives you a real nice little online portfolio of your writing clips. And then people can go to your page and they can tweet it, they can share it, whatever you want to do. But it also shows you how many times that these clips have already been shared. So, for example, one of my articles, you can sort it by the number of tweets or shares, and it pulls that information in from the existing site. So I can look right here. If I didn't know which one of my articles on the Examiner or my blog was the most popular over all time, I can use this to sort it, and it'll sort it, again, by popularity. So I can look at this and say, wow, when I write about XYZ, that's when I get the most tweets and shares and likes, so maybe I should write more about that type of mm-hmm. thing. So it's sort of dual purpose, but it looks really nice. It's really simple to use. You can hook up your Twitter, your LinkedIn, your Google+, your website, your Facebook, so it gives you a nice little profile as well.
And I see here in the chat that Greg has added, it would be very, very useful for PR.
Absolutely.
So anybody that's
involved
with PR should be looking at that. Absolutely. Thanks, Greg. Yeah, it's a good point.
Yep, contently.com. So that's that. The next one is kind of geeky. I mentioned briefly that I'm working on a startup, so I'm doing a whole bunch of, I did a wireframe class this week, all these geeky things that are sort of outside of my realm of geekiness. But this one site that I stumbled upon, I think is pretty cool. And the premise is, let's say you're out on the web and you find an error in somebody's website, because that never happens, right? I feel like I find errors in people's websites all the time. And I want to contact them and just be like, heads up, this link doesn't work. Or, usually it's like your Twitter doesn't go to anywhere but Twitter.com, things like
mm-hmm.
that. But what you can do is you can sort of take the proactive approach. And it's a site called correct.li. So So CORRECT.LI. And it's a really simple process to just sign up for it. You put in your email and you create a password, and then it emails you an API key. So it's going to give you a whole bunch of code that you can put into your website, and it allows people, it gives you like a little button, basically, that says we use correctly. To let people know that, hey, you know, I appreciate the integrity of my site, and I want it to be the best that it can be, but we're all human and we make mistakes, even, you know, our web developers, you know, there's going to be an error here and there. You know, I'm acknowledging the fact that there might be an error, so, hey, if you find it, you know, please let me know. So it's a way to help people understand that you acknowledge that you might not be perfect, but also giving people a platform to send you a quick note and let you know if something does need to be fixed. So.
That's very clever.
Yeah, I thought that was. And it gives you reports and all sorts of stuff. So I would appreciate if everybody would go and do this on their website. And I will go around and tell you everything that is wrong with your site very easily, because I'm somehow going to make money off that one day, I promise.
Well, and, you know, the next set of eyes, I was looking at somebody's website, and we had a conference call, and I couldn't let it go. There was a typo. I mean, it was just right there on the front page, and
yeah.
I just had to tell him, because I knew if I didn't tell him right then, I would forget, and that typo
right.
would live there forever. So in 2 seconds, he's, oh, hold on, let me fix it right now. It's like, okay, fine, you go in the back end, you fix it. It's like, okay, good. But I really hesitated to say something, but he was so, so appreciative. It's like, you know, Deb, I don't know how many times I've looked at the site. I missed that. It's like, yeah.
Well, yeah, and yeah. I think that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, like, I built my own site, and, you know, I looked at it 9,000 times.
Sure.
But I'm going to, you know, glance over the same mistake 9,000 times, because at
Absolutely.
Some point it sort of all blends together. So, you know, I think this is nice to give you at least a second set of eyes and
mm-hmm.
sort of elicit feedback from your site. So that
Next.
Is correct.li. The next one, I just wanted to let everybody be aware of this because it just rolled out on Tuesday, I believe, at least for everybody, is Google for Entrepreneurs. So if you go to google.com/entrepreneurs, there's a ton of awesome resources for entrepreneurs. So there's programs, there's webinars, there's events, and then there's just a whole resources page on tools that you can use. Of course, it's all pretty much centered around Google applications, which is, of course, why they have done it. But just getting set up with Google Plus for your business and using AdWords and how to make the most use of Google Apps. But then working with developers, finding local business groups. It's just a really, really excellent resource. So I highly recommend check out google.com/entrepreneurs.
I will admit to you, I had no clue this existed. I missed that. I don't know how I missed it, but totally missed that.
Yeah, so really cool site. So I'm really excited about that.
Very good. Before you jump into one more, I'm going to, and Todd, I think you're still, or maybe Todd dropped off, but Todd introduced something to me this week. AK, I don't know if you've used it, and I think we could use it together. It's liveminutes.com. Have you ever used that before?
No, and you did tell me about that, and I forgot to check it out.
It's really, really cool. So if you do online conferencing, and you can do up to 9 people, and you know what, I love the Google Hangout, and I like to do that. But you would have to use Google Docs if you wanted to share something. In liveminutes.com, you can actually go in and say, okay, I can do it right now. Just go to liveminutes and say, I want to have a meeting, and I'm going to send an email out to anybody that's listening tonight. And you don't have to be a member. You just jump on. But you can share a document. You can all collaborate together. You can see. You can do video so you can see each other. So it's like a live conference call. They can phone in. You can actually – it's free conference calling. You can phone in via, you know, your landline, or I could actually set it up to where my conference line on Live Minutes will call you. So say, hey, okay, I want to have a meeting now, and your phone is going to ring. You're going to pick it up. So it's really cool, and I bumped you out of your last Geek It Out because we've run out of time.
I was done, and that was a perfect one.
Oh, good. So thanks. Andy is still on, so thank you so much for joining us tonight and geeking out
My
with
pleasure.
Us. And I know Todd will be listening. So Todd, it was great having you and everybody that was in the chat room, from Greg and Dana helping us tweet. And next week we will have Jean from Charity Miles, and everybody probably knows that that's one of our favorite charities or apps right now. And we've got a big event going on in New York City. So Greg, I know you're there in New York, and he might be able to join us. It's coming up in October, so we'll have all the details next week on our show. I'm so excited about it. I can't wait.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. Very good. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening, and until next time.
Have a great night, everybody. Thank you. Bye, Andy.
See you, guys. Thanks.
Don't show me, don't show me, don't show me.